WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The Whitney Museum in New York is showing a retrospective of Keith Haring's work. He became internationally renowned for work that used to get him arrested. Haring's early work took its cue from New York City subway graffiti. He made the rounds of subway stations doing quick chalk sketches on train station walls. The designs were cartoon-like human figures, barking dogs, hearts, and crawling babies. Rush Hour provided a bigger audience for his work than any gallery or museum could. Haring became an important part of the East Village art scene and eventually became an art superstar, but he continued to insist that his work have a life outside the art world. He painted colorful murals on walls and buildings, created public sculpture, and decorated rock clubs. He also opened a pop shop where he sold items like T-shirts, radios, and refrigerator magnets imprinted with his colorful, cartoon-like designs. Haring died of AIDS in 1990. On this archive edition, we have an interview we recorded in 1987. He told me what it was about graffiti that excited him when he moved to New York City from Pittsburgh in 1978.
Immediately after coming to New York, although I was going to galleries and seeing other things also, one of the things that struck me most was the work in the subway, because the trains were really, almost every train was painted, and they were really beautiful.
Like murals on the sides of whole train cars.
Yeah, like the entire car is usually sometimes inside and out. And it was in a way very pop. I mean, the characters using colors and cartoon characters, which had come out of, I think, the whole generation of people that were growing up with really good cartoons on television and really good sort of pop culture.
So you wanted to do something that was your version of that kind of expression?
Well, I think, for the first 2 years, I didn't do anything on the street. I mean, I was sort of watching and appreciating it, but my thing that I wanted to not do was to sort of jump on the bandwagon and copy their style or do something that looked as if it was just an imitation or something of what I was seeing on the trains. So the first time that I did something in the street was really only when I had discovered something that I thought made sense to be on the street. Although I had a lot of things in common with these graffiti things, because my whole background had really been in cartooning, and so my concept and sense of the line and of the scale that I was seeing there and of the sense of color, etc., was very much in tune with them, but there was also something that was distinctly different in the kind of drawings that I was starting to do. And it was really only when I started drawing these sort of images, which in the beginning were just human images and animals and spaceships and pyramids and things in different combinations and juxtapositions, it was only then that I really had something to put on the subway. Because before that, I had been doing only abstract drawings, sort of, doing, I guess, pseudo-abstract expressionist or sort of gestural abstract drawings, which didn't make sense to me to be on the street. But as soon as I had this vocabulary kind of images, it almost necessitated that it should be on the street.
One of the things you were doing was drawing in subway stations.
That started after I had come up with these characters, and then by accident sort of discovered that there were all these empty panels in the subway inside the station where they usually have advertisements. When they don't have enough ads, they cover the space with empty black paper to cancel out the old ad. And although they had probably been there for years, one day I felt like I had discovered it, because I had never seen anyone draw on it before. And it immediately seemed like the perfect place to draw. First of all, because I could draw very quickly, because these things I was drawing were very simple and very, very quick sort of, line drawings. And also because it was a very borderline case between being legal and illegal, because it wasn't right on the wall, and because I was drawing with chalk, it was sort of a delicate sort of situation when I would get caught, because it was hard to really say that you were defacing, because you were drawing with chalk, and also you were drawing on a paper panel that would inevitably be changed and replaced within a week or 2 weeks.
You were fined several times by the police and I think arrested once?
I was arrested several times and fined several times. But in those cases, a lot of times it would start out being a little bit scary, but it would end up being a really amusing situation because the cop who caught me usually didn't know who I was, but when he would take me to the station, a lot of times would find out that other policemen in the station were eager to find out who this person was, because after a year or two, everyone that rode the subways knew the drawings, you know, because if you rode the subway, and you know, even just once a week, you'd see several drawings, and this went on for a 5-year period. So I had a large following of people in the subway, many of which were policemen that spent their time in the subway, that were very eager to find out who I was. I had a great, actually, one of my favorite stories was coming out of a restaurant with Andy Warhol when we were eating, and a cop came up to him and wanted his autograph. And Andy was always, the first thing Andy would always do is introduce the other people. He was always sort of playing down his own importance and saying, you know, well, you have to, here, you should get his autograph because he's a famous graffiti artist. And the cop said, really? And he started, the cop was in uniform. He started taking out his ticket book. And so I sort of looked at Andy like, what, he's, you know, he can't give me a ticket now for something I did before. And he opened the ticket book, and on the inside of the ticket book was a sticker with my Radiant Baby thing on it. So it was sort of, you know, it sort of turns up in funny places. You know, so I actually had a lot of cops that were fans at the same time.
One of the projects you've taken on is a store in which you sell T-shirts and buttons and other items with
toys,
your
coloring books, posters, etc.
With your designs on them,
yeah.
And even the walls of the store are painted
right by
you in your designs. And this has been very controversial in the art world. Some people think it's really exciting to get your work out on common objects like T-shirts, and other people think it's a sign that you've really sold out and made your art into the equivalent of designer jeans.
Right. Yes. For me, it was not something that was a matter of choice. If I was being honest to myself, and more importantly, honest to the work itself, to the drawings, and to even down to the way the line itself, the kind of line, the kind of image that I was creating, then the pop shop grew out of something that for me was inevitable. The same way that when the drawings of these images, which were about communicating information and ideas, existed, and then because they existed, they, by almost by the nature of themselves, they demanded to be in public, which made them be in the subway. In the same way, once they were in the subway and had effectively started to communicate and become part of the consciousness of not only New York City, but then through magazines and video and television to the world, it also necessitated that I continue with that idea and pursue it in a way that was honest to myself and to that thing, in that definitely I could have, and very easily, I guess, hidden within the safety of the art world and stayed in my studio and produced paintings, and which sell on the art market for very inflated prices, because that's what the art market is about. That's a whole other question. But the for me, it was inside the work itself that it was not owned by me. It was bigger than me, and it was something that should be part of the whole world. And the only way to really make that happen was to do things, first of all, things through commercial publication, meaning sometimes album covers or advertising and magazines, but also to make things on things which people could have, so that people could have a piece of this whole thing.
So you don't see it as commercializing your art, you see it as making your art accessible to people who don't have the money to buy
a canvas. Well, I mean, I can't, of course, cannot deny that it is not commercializing it, because that's the way the world works. I mean, you can't, it's impossible to give away things to everyone, right? I mean, I have spent a lot of time doing giveaway things also. I mean, printing posters and giving them away for free at rallies, anti-nuclear things, or Free South Africa, etc., or giving away badges and little things like that. But on a, to really start, to really get it and make some real impact into other people's minds and the world, etc., and culture, the only way to really have any effect on that was to work within that system. I mean, you can't really be outside of a system and criticize it or comment on it and change it or have any impact without being inside of it and sort of working through the same mechanics of that system.
You were good friends with the late Andy Warhol, and he was really the master of mass-produced art. Did you get any advice from him on the kind of undertaking that you've done with the Pop Shop? Advice on merchandising your art or on mass-producing it?
Not necessarily specific things, but Andy was always full of encouragement. Actually, we discussed lots of ideas, but... and discussed almost everything, I guess. I mean, because we'd talk about different things. But Andy would generally support almost anything that you said. So it was sort of hard to get really a critical answer out of him. But more than by conversation, I learned a lot of things from Andy just by watching and by example. I mean, Andy was one of the best sort of... teachers of people just by what he was saying one sentence or just by example. He was a kind of incredible philosopher that a lot of people looked up to and learned things from. At the same time, watching the way that the art world, the quote unquote established art world and art market, treated Andy, I also learned a lot of things about the risks and the dangers of doing that. But for me, anything worth doing is worth taking a risk. I mean, if you look at a painting of Andy Warhol's now, even after his death, a side of a painting by Jasper Johns or something like that, the prices are they have nothing to do with each other. But for me, the value of something cannot be determined by something like the art market or the art world. And the value of Warhol is tenfold greater than a Jasper Johns ever will be. The amount of people and the amount of effect that he has had on the culture and the world and thinking is incredible.
I guess one of the things that probably surprised a lot of people was the vodka ad that you did the illustration for.
Well, actually, it's funny because that's the only commercial thing that I've done in the United States. The vodka ad, I actually got into because of Andy. Andy had done the ad for Absolut Vodka last year, and Andy actually suggested the idea to me and asked me if I wanted to do it.
And
for me, the fact that Andy had done it first had totally okayed it for me. Although there are things that Andy also did that I wouldn't do after him. But the people that were doing the vodka ad were very they were sort of genuine about it and were very clean. One interesting thing, which actually I just happened to me last week, found out that I was talking to a friend that's in jail in Rikers Island, and it was telling me that that he had my Absolut Vodka ad up on his wall in the cell, right? And all of a sudden it dawned on me that anything anyone negative could say about me was totally washed away just by that, because the fact that was maybe the only way that my art could have gotten into inside of a prison or places where people are really have no other access to any kind of thing, but that he could have taken it out and put it on his wall, and it was still art. I mean, it was totally effective, even if it only got to that one person.
Keith Haring, recorded in 1987, 3 years before he died of AIDS. The Keith Haring retrospective will be at the Whitney Museum in New York through September 21st.